This is Free Speech Radio News for Monday, September 24th, 2001. I'm Aaron Glantz, sitting in for Verna Avery Brown. Afghanistan says it shot down an American spy plane over its territory. Peace activists demonstrate across Europe and in New York. And New York's mayor, Rudolph Giuliani, may want a third term, even though he's barred from running by term limits. But first, these news headlines.
I'm Randy Zimmerman with the headlines for Free Speech Radio News. The White House announced plans to attack the financial assets of people and organizations they say are terrorists. Gareth Schweitzer reports from the Capitol.
Osama bin Laden's name features prominently on a list of suspected terrorists released by the White House today who will have their financial assets frozen by the United States government. The White House remains reticent, however, to release any evidence linking Osama bin Laden to the crimes of September 11th. Professor Anne-Marie Slaughter of Harvard Law School believes this information is especially important for potential Arab allies.
This is a situation in which more is definitely better, not only for specific allies, but also for countries that are faced with a delicate domestic political situation, often a fundamentalist Islamic group against a more moderate group, in which case the more proof, the better.
The State Department plans to release a public report at an unspecified date documenting evidence against al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden, considered vital to garnering public and international support for any military action. From Washington, D.C., I'm Gareth Schweitzer for Free Speech Radio News.
The president's financial proposal has been on the United Nations agenda for years. Susan Wood reports from the U.N.
At a White House news conference this morning, President Bush said he would seek congressional approval of two United Nations treaties aimed at combating terrorism.
I'll be asking members of the U.S. Senate to approve the U.N. Convention on Suppression of Terrorist Financing and a related convention on terrorist bombings, and to work with me on implementing the legislation.
The International Convention for the Suppression of the Financing of Terrorism, adopted by the General Assembly in 1999, has been ratified by just four of the UN's 189 member countries. It requires banks to identify their customers and report large or unusual transactions that may involve money laundering. While welcoming Bush's proposal to cooperate with other countries in the framework of international law, critics say it represents a selective and hypocritical use of the United Nations and call on the administration to seek UN approval of any military action. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Susan Wood at the United Nations.
The U.S. Navy is scheduled to begin their bombing practice on the Puerto Rican island of Vieques today. Protesters say bombing in Vieques was immoral before September 11th and is immoral today. Shannon Novak reports from San Juan.
From the federal prison where he is serving time for civil disobedience, Vieques Mayor Damaso Serrano said today the United States Navy is terrorizing the people of Vieques with its military exercises. Protesters have agreed not to interrupt this round of maneuvers for two reasons: out of respect for victims of the September 11th attacks, and the bombing range security is on heightened alert. The Coast Guard will have a security role for the Theodore Roosevelt Battle Group while it practices in Vieques. The Navy reports 23 days of ship-to-shore and air-to-ground inert practices. Groups who protest the Navy's practice on Vieques say they struggle for peace in Vieques, peace in New York, peace in Washington, Afghanistan, and the entire world. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Shannon Novak, San Juan.
And finally, the order has just been lifted from the first school district in the nation to have court-ordered desegregation. Dave Littman reports from North Carolina.
In a landmark setback for school integration, a federal appeals court has upheld a decision to end consideration of race in school assignments, removing the school system from 32 years of court supervision. Declaring the Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools free of intentional discrimination, the court attributed segregation to the residential choices of black and white families. The neighborhood school system that will now be put in place, however, will be as segregated as the neighborhoods. An appeal to the Supreme Court is still possible. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Dave Lippman in Charlotte, North Carolina.
And I'm Randy Zimmerman for Free Speech Radio News.
The leader of Afghanistan's ruling Taliban militia said today that the United States can expect more terrorist activity until it withdraws its forces from the Persian Gulf and ends what he calls its bias against Palestinians if it wants to eliminate terrorism. In a statement faxed to news agencies from its headquarters in Kandahar, Afghanistan, Mullah Mohammed Omar said the death of alleged terrorist mastermind Osama bin Laden would do little to remove the threat against the United States. Meantime, Pakistani authorities pulled their diplomats out of Afghanistan's capital of Kabul in anticipation of a U.S. military assault. Jeremy Scahill has more.
Secretary of State Colin Powell said today that the war against terrorism is underway. The Pentagon has confirmed that it has lost contact with one of its unmanned spy planes over Afghanistan, while the Taliban claims it shot the plane down. All this as reports in the British media say covert special forces have already had skirmishes with Taliban fighters inside Afghanistan. Today at the White House, President George W. Bush refused to discuss details of current U.S. operations within Afghanistan.
In terms of activities within Afghanistan, I'm not going to talk about those. I will not jeopardize our mission in any way by talking about military or in-country plans. We have a responsibility as an administration to speak as candidly as we can to the American people, but without jeopardizing life. And so, therefore, we will be willing to discuss that very important question at an appropriate time, and now is not the appropriate time.
Meanwhile, the Taliban is reported to be in the process of mobilizing some 300,000 men to defend against impending U.S. attacks on Afghanistan. The spiritual leader of the Taliban, Mullah Mohammed Omar, issued a statement today accusing Washington of attempting to install a pro-American government there. He accused the U.S. of making Islam its hostage, called on America to withdraw its forces from the Persian Gulf, and to end what he called its bias against the Palestinians if Washington wants to eliminate terrorism. Today, the Taliban ambassador in Pakistan made a plea for Islamic governments not to back the United States, but to come forward and mediate a peaceful resolution to the crisis.
We call on Muslim countries to come forward and themselves solve this issue. And instead of, or before, extending cooperation and support to America, they should come forward and create and environment of understanding.
Washington at present is experiencing much difficulty in enlisting the full support of Arab governments. Only Kuwait has given its complete backing to the U.S. There are reports that Saudi Arabia, a strong ally of the U.S. during the Gulf War, has denied the Pentagon use of a key military base, while the Egyptian government has urged restraint. While most Arab nations have said they support an international coalition against terrorism, that doesn't necessarily mean as defined by Washington. Several governments have said they want the United Nations to coordinate any efforts. Moreover, a number of governments have said it would be difficult to support any action in Afghanistan without solid evidence that Osama bin Laden is indeed responsible for the attacks on the World Trade Center and Pentagon. The Bush administration now says it will provide documentation of bin Laden's involvement to governments it says are cooperating with Washington, U.S. Secretary of State Colin Powell.
But there's no question that this network, with this gentleman at the head, one can call a terrorist a gentleman just for purposes of illustration, this guy at the head of this network, at the chairman of this holding company of terrorism, is the one who is responsible. And as we are able to provide information that is not sensitive or classified, I think we will try to do that in every way.
Over the weekend, the Bush administration moved to lift sanctions against Pakistan and India that were imposed after both countries performed nuclear tests. In the case of Pakistan, this is being directly linked to the military government agreeing to cooperate with Washington in its impending attacks against Afghanistan. The U.S. also announced today it was restructuring Pakistan's debt. Today, the Pakistani Minister of Finance, Shaukat Aziz, outlined what he called the benefits the country hopes to gain from its new relationship with the United States.
That would allow us to seek U.S. support in IMF, World Bank, Asian Development Bank, and the other multilateral institutions. As you know, due to sanctions, they could not vote in our favor.
Pakistan today announced it will begin allowing additional refugees fleeing Afghanistan to cross over its border to escape what appear to be imminent U.S. attacks. The U.N. High Commissioner on Refugees says some 1 million people are amassing at the country's borders with Iran and Pakistan. Iran still refuses to open its border, so the major refugee crisis for now seems to be set for Pakistan. UNHCR spokesperson Peter Kessler.
Well, UNHCR is preparing for possibly a massive movement of people. The numbers of people who could potentially cross the frontiers are absolutely enormous. UNHCR's preparation is to bring in enough plastic sheeting for 1 million people. We've purchased 20,000 tents. We're flying in dozens and dozens of staff. We're making every preparation possible, and we think together with the government and the Red Crescent that we'll be able to assist any movement. But we hope that the authorities inside Afghanistan and the West will find a solution.
A U.S. military delegation is currently in Pakistan working out the details of its attack plans in Afghanistan. Most analysts agree those attacks could begin in full force any day. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Jeremy Scahill.
Peace activists demonstrated across Europe this weekend, holding rallies from London to Budapest to Berlin. In New York, thousands marched across the city Friday night to call for peace and demand an end to attacks on Muslim and Arab communities. Chanting "war is not the answer" and "Islam is not the enemy," the marchers worked their way uptown from Union Square, where mourners have been holding nightly vigils for the missing and the dead. Miranda Kennedy reports from New York.
Before the march began, Arab, South Asian, and religious community leaders held a Muslim peace rally in a nearby park. Because police had revoked their rally permit and the organizers did not feel safe without police protection, speakers addressed a small audience. New York City Councilmember Christine Quinn told the crowd that New Yorkers must stop the attacks on their Arab neighbors.
I fail to understand how harassing or beating or hurting another human being will help any of the victims or their families. Attacking someone because you think they're South Asian, you think they're Muslim, you think they're Arab, will not bring one person back. It will not raise the World Trade Center back up, and it will never take us to where we were in our own minds and souls on September 10th. The only thing that perpetrating bias against another person because of their perceived race, ethnicity, or religion, the only thing that does is bring us all further apart, commit more crimes, and separate and divide us.
Many demonstrators said they were marching in the streets for the first time, driven by sadness at the destruction in their city and by fear of war. They emphasized that they were not undermining the tragedy of September 11th events by marching and wore stickers that read, "Our grief is not a cry for war." Monica Moorhead is an activist who has shifted her focus to preventing U.S. retaliation, which she points out will not help the families of the victims.
They want to go to war, and especially against the people of the Middle East. And we feel that this government is using this horrific tragedy that happened on September 11th as an excuse to widen a war against the peoples of the Middle East. Why are they bombing a poor country like Afghanistan? You know, a country whose government the U.S. has been supporting since the late 1970s. And we just feel that this is not the best way to honor the memory of the 6,000 plus people who lost their lives in the World Trade Center. What's going to happen to the families of these victims? War is not going to help them.
The march, which was called on short notice by the New York Direct Action Network's Loose Anti-War Coalition, grew to be much larger than organizers expected. As the numbers swelled, hecklers called out to the demonstrators in Midtown's busy Friday night streets, spurring several verbal altercations.
They killed innocent people down there, right. and we shouldn't defend ourselves. Yeah. You guys are a disgrace,
guys.
A goddamn disgrace, you guys are.
Guys, just calm down.
People spilled their blood for this country. You guys are a disgrace.
You're right.
You're a goddamn disgrace. I'm a disgrace. You put it down. You shouldn't turn your head. You don't have the right to look at me.
But some bystanders along the streets cheered the marchers on, or even joined them. As the march approached Times Square, where the U.S. military recruiting office is located, riot police began to section off groups of demonstrators to break up the march. After blocking off the route to Times Square, police let demonstrators out of barricaded areas three or four at a time. Four marchers were arrested, three were charged with disorderly conduct, and one with criminal impersonation. While several thousand marched for peace on Friday, thousands more people gathered in Yankee Stadium in the Bronx on Saturday to hold a different kind of mourning ceremony. TV talk show host Oprah Winfrey was the master of ceremonies.
We pray today that from the ashes of the Trade Center, the Pentagon, and that field in Pennsylvania, that will rise a new spirit of beauty and unity in our country, creating a new tapestry of one heart, one hope, one voice, one America. It is my honor, ladies and gentlemen, to present the Commander-in-Chief of the Atlantic Fleet, Admiral Robert Natter.
Natter spoke about the majesty of the American flag and urged those assembled to honor American troops heading to the Persian Gulf. Anti-war activists are planning a major demonstration in New York in 2 weeks' time. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Miranda Kennedy in New York.
Despite a term limits law that would force him from leaving office next year, New York Mayor Rudolph Giuliani is considering the vocal advice of his supporters, who say he should stay on the job. Giuliani was prepared to leave office quietly when his second term expires December 31st, but that was before two commercial airliners destroyed the World Trade Towers and forever altered the city's skyline. Today, Giuliani talked to the press about his intentions, but betrayed nothing. Jeff Brady reports from New York.
Since the September 11th attack, the mayor has worked nonstop, holding news conferences, attending funerals, and coordinating disaster relief efforts. Petitions have been circulated around the city, and some of New York's biggest companies bought full-page ads in newspapers calling for extending the mayor's term despite term limits. A few days after the attack, Giuliani says he was flattered by the calls but stated that the election must go on to show terrorists that they can't rattle the basic laws of the political system. But last week, the mayor changed his language about the issue, and today in a press conference, he said now is not the time to discuss the matter.
And as soon as I have time, I will think about it, and I'll talk to the people that I trust the most and get their advice, and then I'll make a statement. It's a very important decision. I need time to think about it. I need time to talk to people about it, and I have not had the time to do that.
A source close to the mayor told the Associated Press on condition of anonymity that Giuliani has talked with advisors about extending his stay in office past December 31st, when his term expires. Bill Goodman, the legal director for the Center of Constitutional Rights, over the years, the Center for Constitutional Rights and other civil rights groups have successfully litigated against the Giuliani administration for violating civil rights laws protecting protesters, police brutality issues, and racial profiling. Goodman says repealing term limit laws in New York City would not be worth the political effort.
It would be another blow to the Constitution because we could expect another period of time during which the Constitution is under attack from the city halls.
To repeal term limit laws would require legislation to be enacted as an emergency measure by Governor George Pataki, or the city council and city voters could amend the city charter. In the meantime, Democratic candidates Mark Green, the public advocate, Fernando Ferrer, the Bronx Borough president, Peter Vallone, the city council speaker, and Alan Hevesy, the city controller, continue to campaign until the primary election. On the Republican side, Mike Bloomberg, the billionaire entrepreneur, is financing his own campaign against Herman Badillo. Voters go to the polls tomorrow. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Jeff Brady in New York.
Several American political prisoners have been placed in solitary confinement as a direct consequence of the September 11th terrorist attack on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. They are also being denied access to their families and attorneys, apparently on the orders of Attorney General John Ashcroft. Among those affected, peace activist Philip Berrigan, who is serving a year and a day at Elkton Prison in Lisbon, Ohio, for a probation violation. He was placed in segregation on the afternoon of September 11th for 10 days, allegedly for his own protection. Kelly Ramirez reports on what happened to Berrigan and what it could mean for the American dissenters in and out of prison.
Elizabeth McAllister, the wife of Philip Berrigan, says it was difficult to get information on her husband, even with the help of her U.S. Senator, Barbara Mikulski, Democrat of Maryland.
Sometime on the afternoon of the 11th of September, he was put in segregation with nothing. And we just did not hear from him. And to me, that was a very surprising thing because he usually writes at least a couple of times, 3-4 times a week often. And I hadn't heard So on Tuesday, I phoned the prison where he's being held, and finally, after 15 phone calls and 5.5 hours, they allowed that he was in segregation. They could not tell me why. That he could not have visitors, that he could not have phone calls, but yes, indeed, he could write letters. And of course, he had the material. I then connected with our local senator, and one of her aides immediately called the prison, and they wouldn't tell her why he was in segregation. And he would need to sign a release form for them to be able to tell her why he was there. So she said, well, get him to sign the release form. Having signed it, she was told that he was in segregation for his protection. The senator called, I think she wrote to the Bureau of Prisons, and finally an attorney demanded to speak with him on the phone. He was called by the Washington office and told that Phil was very fine. And he said, that's not adequate. I need to talk to him. So a couple of hours later, Phil called him. He was on his way being processed out of segregation back to general population. So I talked with him finally on the phone. He had no access to any news. He was alone for 10 days. He saw only the guards who came to give him his meals.
Free Speech Radio News has learned from McAllister and other activists that anti-imperialist Marilyn Buck, who is serving an 80-year sentence in Dublin, California, is in solitary confinement without access to mail, lawyers, or her property. Black Liberation Army member Cindiata Acoli and Puerto Rican independence activist Carlos Alberto Torres are also segregated. But American Indian activist Leonard Peltier is still in the general population at the federal prison in Leavenworth, Kansas, and Pennsylvania death row journalist Mumia Abu-Jamal has not been deprived of visitors or writing material since September 11th. So far, there have been no moves against political prisoners held at the state level. Human rights attorney Robert Bloom is monitoring the situation.
Policy that they've instituted, and I'm told comes directly from the Department of Justice, Ashcroft, attorneys of record have not been able to be in touch with their clients.
Is this since September 11th?
Yes. People who have been flagged by the Bureau of Prisons and by the Department of Justice as political activists were put in segregation, supposedly, in at least one case, for the prisoner's own protection, they said. But why prohibit them from contacting their lawyers by mail, by visit, by telephone? It seems a little hard to believe it was for their own protection. It really is the beginning of the very thing that the administration, with the collaboration of Congress, seems to be preparing the population for. And they've, of course, taken the most vulnerable segment of the population, people who are in prison, and immediately moved on them. It's just a very ominous sign.
McAllister is calling for people to become more critical of the government, even as it becomes harder to dissent.
I think to thinking people in this country, it is very, very clear that the only defense that we have is justice, and that we are vulnerable, and we can't guarantee security, no matter how much money or how we invest in it, no matter how many civil liberties we give up for it. It's not something that we can buy.
Bloom is calling for attorneys and law firms to donate pro bono time to break the wall of silence surrounding political prisoners. Interested parties can contact him at bbloom222@hotmail.com. I'm Kelly Ramirez for Free Speech Radio News.
Free Speech Radio News correspondent Ed Rippey has this look at media coverage of the terrorist attacks.
George Bush is the president. He makes the decisions. And, you know, it's just one American. Wherever he wants me to line up, just tell me where.
That was CBS News anchor Dan Rather on The David Letterman Show. It's one example of what worries some media critics. Another is incorrect reporting. This is from a CBS affiliate in New York, the day of the attack.
So far, two groups are claiming credit for this attack, Osama bin Laden being one, and the Democratic Front for Liberation of Palestine.
In fact, as this story goes to press, no group has claimed responsibility. Jill Nelson, columnist for MSNBC, blasted the U.S. government and media for appealing to the country's lowest sensibilities and validating and encouraging vengeance.
They are jingoists for the government and for President Bush. They are not doing their job. It's completely inappropriate. And as I said, I really think it appeals to the worst in us. You know, this is a time to de-escalate. This is a time to evolve, not devolve. Mm-hmm. But what we see is the media colluding with the government.
Nelson said that Peter Jennings was the only TV reporter she saw who showed any skepticism of government officials' overnight fingering of Saudi expatriate Osama bin Laden. Most so-called coverage, she said, has been rumor, falsehoods, and good-looking talking heads babbling while stations look for someone who actually knows something. Norman Solomon is a syndicated columnist and executive director of the Institute for Public Accuracy. He said that the Pentagon has announced restrictions on press coverage of its actions, even tighter than those during the Gulf War. Solomon said that none of the major media outlets has made any protest, but, he said, U.S. officials are very cooperative with the media when it comes to promoting war. He described what he called an extreme thirst for blood in U.S. media.
Every daily paper in the country of any size seems to have at least one and often more than one columnist like the San Francisco Chronicle's Deborah Saunders who simply want to kill as many people as possible because they are vocally saying that they feel this is the appropriate response. And we have people like Bill O'Reilly on Fox News, Sanders in the Chronicle, and many, many other pundits who are saying, look, the time for restraint is past. That's naivete.
Andrea Buffa, executive director of Media Alliance, accused media of colluding with the U.S. government in creating an atmosphere of war. She said broadcast media get to use the public airwaves for free in order to provide accurate, balanced information to citizens, but most U.S. radio and television stations have been mouthpieces for the Bush administration. Buffa faulted them for not providing discussions of U.S. foreign policy which might help citizens understand why so many people are so angry at the United States, and for not exploring any possible responses other than war and the erosion of civil liberties. She said that although there has been some good reporting on how individuals have coped with the catastrophe, there's been some very shoddy reporting on international affairs. She described one TV reporter who cited an unnamed government source as saying that Iraq was involved in the suicide attack.
So there was no documentation. It was an unnamed source. And all of a sudden, the media is dragging Iraq into this as well. You know, is that something that was dropped to the media by the administration to now have a pretext for attacking Iraq again? That type of stuff should not be reported without any evidence and without a name of someone who is reporting that information behind it.
Some media have shown more restraint. The San Francisco Examiner printed a detailed article on how U.S. foreign policy in Afghanistan sowed the seeds of terrorism. It also ran an editorial urging a cautious response, avoiding indiscriminate retaliation which would serve as, quote, a recruiting tool and an excuse for more attacks. But syndicated radio talk show host Michael Savage has a simpler view of things.
God bless America, and God bless President Bush. Either you are with us or you are with the terrorists. It can't be any more clear than that, can it?
This is Ed Rippey for Free Speech Radio News.
Free Speech Radio News is a production of Pacifica Reporters Against Censorship. I'm Aaron Glantz, sitting in for Verna Avery Brown. Please tune in tomorrow for another edition of Free Speech Radio News. Free Speech Radio News is a production of Pacifica Reporters Against Censorship. I'm Aaron Glantz, sitting in for Verna Avery Brown. Please tune in tomorrow for another edition of Free Speech Radio News. Reporters Against Censorship. I'm Aaron Glantz, sitting in for Verna Avery Brown. Please tune in tomorrow for another edition of Free Speech Radio News. Speech Radio News. Brown, please tune in tomorrow for another edition of Free Speech Radio News.